So, too, from mid-18th century Holland, about which the famous description came from visiting traveler James Boswell. Most of their principal towns are sadly decayed, and instead of finding every mortal employed, you meet with multitudes of poor creatures who are starving in idleness. Were Sir William Temple, a 17th century chronicler, to revisit these provinces, he would scarcely believe the alteration which they have undergone. Dutch Reformed pastors called for national renewal and incessantly attacked laziness, prostitution, French fashions, immigrants, and homosexuals. The British example, of course, is the freshest. Winston Churchill in 1908 expressed gloom that the seed of imperial ruin and national decay, the unnatural gap between the rich and the poor, the exploitation of boy labor, the physical degeneration which seems to follow so swiftly on civilized poverty, the swift increase of vulgar, jobless luxury, are the enemies of Britain. In The Strange Death of Liberal England, 1910 to 1914, George Dangerfield described 1911 as a year of London climbing towards its peak of plutocratic splendor, and tales of ballrooms banked high with the loot of hothouses, of champagne flowing like a sea, or bare backs, jeweled bosoms, and fabulous expenditure. Cultural historians have dwelt on the other upheavals and tensions of the fin de siècle. The decadence movement among literary Londoners epitomized by Oscar Wilde and Aubrey Beardsley, the estimates of 60,000 or so prostitutes in the capital, occultism, and the suffragette campaign for women's votes and women's rights. Decay always has two faces. The one displaying economic and social polarization and injustice, which always stirs complaint among progressives, and the second representing moral and cultural decadence comes sophistication, which invariably stirs conservative and fundamentalist outrage. The focus of criticism can run the gamut from haute cuisine and fashion to prostitution, effete art, and homosexuality. Here, too, as we will see, the early 21st century United States is repeating portions of a familiar pattern. Our fourth hallmark involves the widespread perception of a pre-millenarian time frame, as when preachers talk of a war to end all wars, of Armageddon, or of Christ's imminent return. This is another way in which the influence of religion feeds a willingness for war. Late 4th century Roman Christians thought the end times might come when Rome fell to the barbarians. Spain's confidence cracked somewhat after the defeat of the Armada in 1588, when Spanish leaders had to answer English, Dutch, and Lutheran taunts that King Philip II was the Antichrist. Part of Spain's response was to captain the Counter-Reformation and the Catholic side in the draining 30 Years' War, 1618 to 1648. As the Netherlands in turn embarked on a costly quarter century of alliance with England and war with France in 1689, Dutch Reformed predicants had identified their own new Antichrist, Louis XIV, the King of France. But the most disturbing late imperial premillennial focus is that of Britain from 1900 into the early years of World War I, until the national trauma of the 420,000 British casualties on the Somme in 1916. As we have seen, Britain in the second half of the 19th century was fired by evangelical religion, global missionary instincts, and the white man's burden identified by Rudyard Kipling. Onward, Christian Soldiers, the great martial hymn published in 1871, boasted triumphal music by Sir Arthur Sullivan, of Gilbert and Sullivan fame. Something of an imperialist, Sullivan in 1900 composed a Te Deum to celebrate the imminent victory in the Boer War, but it could not be played until 1902, after his death. Music hall jingoism, militant Protestant hymnology, and Queen and country literature converged. Much as the male population of the United States rose during the 1980s and 1990s to the excitement of renewed gunboat diplomacy, the 1986 bomber strike on Tripoli, Libya, and invasions, Grenada, Panama, and the Gulf War, as well as endless fictional high-tech combat thrillers of the sort pioneered by Tom Clancy, British males did much the same thing between 1890 and 1914. Cecil Eby, an American professor, has tabulated the drum rolls and bugle calls. By 1889, 40,000 brass bands existed in Britain, playing more military marches than anything else. 500 music halls in London alone belted out patriotic choruses. Between 1871 and 1914, in addition, English fiction writers turned out 60 books about foreign invasions of Britain, 41 German, 18 French. In none of these volumes was Britain the aggressor, but even in Boy Scout and cricket uniforms, young British males were preparing for the great match to come.